Well, welcome back. Hey, it's me again. Welcome to session number 5. And as usual, I'm excited because we got some great stuff for you. And we're most of the way through phase number 1 of the 10 steps to increase your sales, which is engage. So far, we've talked about how to make sure that you're prepared and in state. You remember that? And then how to get their attention. Once you do this, you'll need to create a quality connection with your client, which we'll cover in the first of the 2 audios of this session, and how to create interest, which we've broken down on the 2nd audio. Now, these are the last 2 steps in phase number 1. So to start with, let's talk about how to create a great relationship and connection. And remember Tony talked earlier about how to create rapport? Well, now we're going to drill deeper, and he's going to give you some specific tools and strategies on how to do just that. So the purpose here is really to identify what these factors are. So let's say that you're a financial advisor and you've got a client who's considering utilizing your services. Now, why are they going to pick you? For what reason would they pick you? Is it your intelligence? Is it what you scored on your CPA exam? Now, it may have something to do with it, but I doubt it. That's probably not the biggest part. The difference is going to be whether that person trusts you and has confidence in you and thinks that you can get the job done, and better yet, believes that you have their best interest at heart. This may be the single most important aspect of sales. So let's get to it. Here's Tony with how to connect and become their best friend.
What's the most important part of the selling process? Inevitably, when I ask that question of salespeople, I get the answer, closing. And interviewing the top persuaders in the world, literally, top communicators, people that are able to have the largest incomes, close the most number of sales, inevitably what they tell me is, no, the key answer to what's most important is rapport between you and the customer. That you have a relationship of responsiveness, that you feel connected with them and they feel connected with you, that they really trust you. If I was going to take one element, one emotion, I would say it's trust. The first question that a prospect has in their mind is, whose interest do you have in mind? Do you really care about me, or are you just in it for your commission? And you got to make sure up front, real early in that presentation, this person really knows what you're really about, and it isn't a forced, yeah, I really like you, or it isn't a fake compliment where you just notice something that's obvious and say it, where you use blatant flattery. You've got to get yourself to the point where you walk in to see a prospect with a deep level of emotion like empathy, a deep caring emotion, a deep, I'm trying to think of a better word for you. I hate to sound corny, but almost a love for somebody. And you say, well, how can I do that with a stranger? It isn't easy. That's why most salespeople don't do very well. But I'm here to tell you that if you can really get a customer, somebody you're just meeting, to feel like you really sincerely care about them right from the very beginning, you can't believe the kind of impact that you can have. How do you go about doing that? Well, I think part of it is asking yourself better questions again. Part of it is thinking about what is it that you love about all human beings? No matter how harsh a person may seem to be, underneath that, there's always somebody there. There's always a diamond in the rough, if you can imagine what I'm speaking of. That is, I can think of some of the people that their first impression I had of the person was just, God, I can't believe this person. But inside, they were a little pussycat. There's somebody who just like had some tough times, and they're in a tough state in their life at that time. They're dealing with a lot of problems. Sometimes the most harsh people are the people you need to have the most support of. And if you can be loving to somebody and caring to somebody who's a stranger, even when they treat you harshly, you induce reciprocation again. They will not forget it. If you walk into a place and somebody says, what do you want? And you say, I apologize. I certainly don't want to be disrespectful to you in any way. I just had an idea that I wanted to share with you about how you can increase your sales about 25%. And it's obvious that you don't want to hear about that right now. But if you did want to hear about it, when would you want me to talk to you? And what you're doing is offering them a new opportunity. See, oftentimes people say to me things like, well, I don't know the answer to that question. And I never argue with a prospect. You never want to argue with them. You always want to align with them. The number one aspect of persuasion is align with somebody and redirect them. That's why rapport is so important. So if somebody says to me something like, I don't know the answer to that question, I'll say, I can appreciate that. I know you don't know the answer. But if you did know, what would you probably say? And as simplistic as that sounds, somebody go from I don't know to, well, do-do-do-do. Because when you take the pressure off, when they no longer have to give you the right answer, many times they'll come up with the answer right away. The only reason they don't know the answer is because they're saying to themselves, I don't know the answer. So give people an opportunity by learning to use this languaging pattern of, well, I know you don't know, but if you did know. Or I know you don't do something now, but if you did, how would it feel? And what you're doing is you're aligning with the person, being on their side, being in rapport, and then redirecting them. The key, I guess, is if you really want to have long-term influence, you can get short-term influence just by impact. See, persuasion can be looked at in many ways. You can persuade somebody by demand. You can persuade somebody by threat. But if you want to influence someone long-term, the only way that's going to happen is if you really have their trust, if they really feel like you care about them personally. The same thing is true of our children as it is for the person that you're going to meet when you go make a sales call. If your child thinks that what you're doing right now, you enjoy when you're spanking them or being upset with them or scolding them verbally or however you discipline your children, if they don't think that you really care, you got a problem. How do we get that to happen? Again, we start by thinking, well, what is it about this person that I really could like? What is it about this person, as soon as I meet them, that's special or unique? And by coming from that place, if you keep asking the question and you really sincerely want an answer, and you're not just doing it to manipulate, you usually come up with those kinds of answers. And caring sells. I got you to remember something, and that is that people buy from friends. If this person sits down with you and they feel like you're a friend, they will tell you things they won't tell anybody else. In fact, they'll even help you close the sale. What I tell most people when I do sales seminars is I say, look, people buy from friends even if the person they're buying from is a lousy salesperson. I mean, isn't it true? How many of you have ever had somebody be a lousy salesperson, but you liked them so darn much that you said, shh, no, don't do that. Here, close me this way. And you actually helped them. Have you done that? I know I've done it lots of times. I'll say, you know, you're going the wrong direction. You know, I'll help you. Say this to me. I'll probably get excited. Right? And sure enough, what happens is, but I'll do that for a friend. I will not do that for somebody who's coming in and trying to manipulate me into doing something. That's why I keep saying the same message over and over again, because repetition is the mother of skill. I hope it'll sink in, not only in your head, but into your heart. That, as simplistic as it is, learning to be associated to these people can do incredible miracles for you in terms of your ability to persuade and influence. Again, you got to believe that you, in your heart, have their best interests in mind. And you got to believe in what you're selling 100%, or none of this works. I'll give you a fun example of how caring has affected me. I went to Hawaii about a year and a half ago, I guess it was. I had been on a real intense schedule, one of the most intense. I don't remember the exact number of days, but somewhere in the range of about 110 seminars and about 125, 135 days. Very, very intense. And I was getting to that point where I was totally burning out, and my body was tense, and I had back problems, and my throat was sore, and I sounded horrible. And I got to that point where I'd like snap at people. And my life is not about that. And when that starts happening, I take a look and go, hey, what's this about? And I realize I'm just physically burnt out. My state is being affected. Has that ever happened to you? Where you're so intense and your body's so tensed up that you snap at people and it's not about them? I didn't want that to happen. So I called my wife up and I said, we need to go someplace. We need to go someplace where I'm not going to talk. She goes, where would that be? I said, let's go someplace where there are no humans. And she goes, where is that going to be? So I looked in this big giant world map. And I looked where we were, and I looked the furthest other side of the globe I could see, and I saw these little islands called Fiji. And I said, well, I've heard those little islands are really beautiful, and there's probably no humans there. Let's go there. So she says, okay. So she books this flight, and we're supposed to fly to Fiji. Now, it's a long flight. I think it's 12 hours, something like that. So, and she knows my body's already tense. I'm not going to probably like sitting for 12 hours. So she broke up the trip and let us fly to Hawaii first, spend a day there, and then continue our flight. Great idea. We always get first-class seats, so we got lots of leg room, and I always get a bulkhead, because I'm 6'8", and a bulkhead usually gives me just a little bit more room. In this aircraft, for some reason, the bulkhead is right up almost against me. So I'm all like this for about 5.5 hours from LA to there. And you can imagine the state I was in by the time I got there. So we get there, and we get our bags, and it's like, I'm all tensed up. We get outside, and we've ordered a limousine. No limo there. We hang in there 15 minutes. No limo. 25 minutes, it's hot, it's humid, we're starting to perspire, still in the limo. After about 30 minutes, I have had it. I said, see, you can't trust anybody. Do you ever notice how you tend to generalize sometimes when you're upset? So, sure enough, you know, she says, come on, honey, I know you're stressed, just relax. She goes, there's another limo over there, I'll see if we can get him and if he'll work with us. So sure enough, she goes over, and being very good persuader she is, she gets him to leave where he is, come pop over us, because his people didn't show up, so we just made a trade. I began to think later, maybe he was the person to start with for us. But the bottom line is, here we are, and he pulls up. He doesn't just pull up and get out of his car, however. He opens the door, jumps out of his car, turns around, pops over, and says, hi, how you doing? Grabs our bags, throws them in, pops over here, throws them in, opens the door, and I'm thinking, what kind of drugs is this guy on? So sure enough, I think, oh, it's okay. I get in the car and I think, okay, well, at least now I can sit down and relax, you know, stretch my legs out finally, you know, be with my wife. And so here I am all stretched out, starting to feel good. And all of a sudden, that doesn't last. Because all of a sudden, the little glass, you know, that separates the back from the front goes down. Zzz, and this guy goes, so, how you doing today? And I'm thinking, oh, God. And I want to be polite, so I said, I'm doing fine. But I try and, like, give him a little bit of a hint by my voice tone that I'm not quite as up as he is. Right? He doesn't catch it. He has no sensory acuity. He turns back and goes, isn't it a great day? And I'm going, yeah, it's a really great day. He says, I love days like this, don't you? And I'm going, yes, I love it. Thank you, you know. He said, you know what I love most about days like this? He said, well, first of all, have you been to Hawaii before? And he's talking 100 miles a minute. I'm going, yes, many, many times. I love it. I come here often. It's great. Thank you. He says, isn't it beautiful? And I'm like, yes, it's beautiful, right? He said, you know what I love most about Hawaii? I said, what? He said, people. People like you. And I'm thinking, oh, God. Right? So I'm thinking, well, all right, I'm going to try and be nice, but I got to let this guy know. So I finally said, you know, I really need to kind of relax. He looks back at me and he keeps on talking, though. But you know what was interesting? He was more committed to being in upstate than I was committed to being in a lousy state. And he began to infect me. You know, all of a sudden, we started talking and he asked me what I did. And I started talking about what I do. And I started talking about people and all the people involved. And he said, you're involved with that many people? It was hard to hear his values, wasn't it? Everything he said was people, people, people. He said, you're involved with that many people every day? And I said, yeah. My voice has just gone up. Yeah. And I thought, yeah, that's why am I leaving people? That's what I love most. Right? And all of a sudden, I'm feeling pretty good, going, yeah, I'm a pretty lucky dude. And so we're talking and everything else, and I'm feeling really good. Now, here's the interesting point. People love people who change their states. You got to remember that. See, we all love people who change our states. Remember the examples I've given you before? That is, the most successful people in our culture are people who have learned to change mass number of people's states. Entertainers are some of the most highly paid people in the world, aren't they? And that's because most people would rather be entertained than educated, unfortunately, and that shows up. But the bottom line is, we want a state change. Think about it. Who is your friend? Who are the people you consider friends? Aren't they people that when you're around them, you feel better, you get a positive state change, and that's why you want to be around them? And they like being around you for the same reasons. Who are the people you don't like? People you avoid. People, because when you get around them, it changes your state also, but it makes it worse. You don't feel so good. What you've got to realize and understand is that if you want something in your life, if you want to become somebody's friend, change your state. Don't you love people that are humorous? Don't you like being around them? Because they're good at changing your state. So that's what this man did, and immediately I liked him. That was number one reason. Number two reason was, I really felt like this guy was sincere and he really cared about me and my wife. He like cared about my family. He's the kind of person that if I had my kids with me on this trip, I would trust him to go off with them and spend time with them, you know, that he would be genuinely interested to go play in the park or go do something, you know. He's that kind of person. And he expressed it to me in many ways. But one way was, we're driving along, we're talking, everything else, you know, and we're about to get to the hotel, and he says, you know, Mr. Robbins, he said, you seem like a really incredible man. I said, well, gosh, thank you very much. You certainly are an incredible man. You've really helped me feel better. I was really burnt out. He said, yeah, I have to tell you, it did look a bit burnt out. I thought, when did you get your first clue? Right? And he says, you know, I'd like to do something for you and Mrs. Robbins. And I said, well, that's not necessary. He said, no, I really want to. He said, you know, as soon as we get to the hotel, you go up, unpack, shower, do whatever you want to do. I'll wait downstairs. But when you're done, I want to take you and Mrs. Robbins out to dinner at the best steakhouse in all of Hawaii. And I thought, God, that's pretty incredible. And I turned to him and I said, listen, I said, that is a phenomenal offer. I said, I really, really appreciate it. And I have to tell you that I can't accept. I said, that's a little too generous on your part. But I do appreciate the intent that you've got behind it, and I appreciate the kind of love that you're putting out with it. He said, no, I really, really want to do it. I want to take you. I said, I really appreciate it, and I can't let you. He said, no, I've got to. I said, no, you can't, because I'm bigger than you are. And I try to tease him, right, and make him smile. And I said, besides that, my wife and I are vegetarians. So I said, we wouldn't be going to a steakhouse. He said, really? Me too. And I thought, I thought, is this a setup, right? But it was true. And we started talking, and sure enough, he talked to me about how he lost, you know, 30 pounds, and I told him I lost 38 pounds, and how my life has so much more energy, and how everything had changed, and da-da-da-da-da, and all this more rapport, more things in common. And so by the time we get to the hotel, it's now time to pay him and tip him. Now, are you going to tip a friend differently than somebody who hands you a bill and goes, by the way, the tip's not on there? When somebody does that to me, I usually think, and it's not going to be, you know? But I love to be able to give somebody more than they expect. When somebody expects something and they don't give good service, I'm not real thrilled. But in this case, he's a friend. So, you know, one of the reasons I've worked hard in my life to make money is the purpose for me for money is to create state changes in people, to create moments in my life and the people around me. So if I got money, I go, here, you know, I want to give it to them. See, that's real selling. Real selling is having people want to give you their money enthusiastically. Now that's selling. And he had done that. I'm taking all his money and he's going, no, I can't accept. I said, you must. He said, no, I can't. Sure enough, I said, you must. And I give him all this money. He's like, can't believe it. Now, the next night, I'm supposed to fly to Fiji. So I have to go to the airport. Am I going to look in the Yellow Pages and call some other limousine service? Or am I going to call my friend? Which one? I'm going to call my friend. Why would I call somebody I don't know when I could be with my friend Steve? Steve is his name. So sure enough, we make arrangements. He's going to pick us up. Now, the interesting thing is that the next day let me tell you two things. One, I left out my favorite part of this experience, and that is we're driving along, right, talking and so forth, and I said, well, how did you get in the limousine business? He said, well, I used to be a steward for Qantas Airlines, and they laid a bunch of us off because they left off some of the flights here, and he said, so I had to figure out what I was going to do, and he thought, well, I need to do something I would love, and he thought, what do I love most? And I said, let me guess, people. And he started laughing. He said, how'd you know? So how did that turn into a limo business, you know, working in a limousine business? He said, well, I figured if I drove a limousine, I could be with people all day long and talk to them constantly. I thought, yeah, okay, that's clear. And so I said, well, you know, how long have you been working for this company? He said, well, this company is my company. And he smiled. I said, wow, congratulations. I said, how long have you had it? He said, well, about 2 months. I said, well, what did you do before that? He said, well, I worked for another limousine company. I said, how long did you do that? He said, well, about 2 months. I said, wow, you must have stashed some money aside, huh? I said, well, not exactly. He said, what happened was one day I was driving this limousine for this other company, and I picked these guys up at the airport, and I drove them around all day long, and they were looking to buy a hotel. And so sure enough, all day long I was just being myself, you know, loving people, being with people, smiling, being happy, loving them. You know, they were great guys, and I really liked them, and I told them so. And then, you know, being happy, you know, don't worry. And so sure enough, what happens, he said, at the end of the day, they said, you know, you have made this the best day of our life. This has been incredible. We've had more fun today than we've had in years. You're incredible. You deserve your own limousine service. So they bought me this limousine. He said, aren't people great? True story. And I said, you got to be kidding me. I said, and I was like, look, is he making this up or something? He said, no, it's absolutely true. I said, well, who has the pink slip on the limousine? He said, I do. I said, God, that's amazing. I said, do you have to, like, pick them up, you know, once a day or something? He said, no, they don't even live here. They live in Boston. And he said, they might come in once a month, but they never demand that I'm going to be there. But, of course, I want to go pick them up because they're my friends. I guess. He said, you know what else they did? I said, what? He said, they gave me $25,000 to start my business so I could do it in style. Wasn't that incredible of them? How's that for a nice example of self-fulfilling prophecies? See, pretty amazing what people do if you just make a state change, if you just care. You know, there's some people that can make a major difference in your life, and you're going to bump into them if you make enough contacts and if you connect with enough people at the deepest level. The most successful salespeople I've found who are long-term players are people that have learned to enjoy themselves because they understand that selling is the process of making friends. If your whole life is about meeting prospects and closing sales, that's a pretty disassociated life, wouldn't you say? See, I believe that you and I are paid for one thing, to make friends. And the more deep friendships, not just, you know, skewed on the edge friends, but the more deep connections we make, the more deep friendships you and I create with people, the more money we'll make automatically. Because people buy from friends, and people buy from friends again and again and again and again. Because why would they want to buy from somebody else? You're the person they're going to come back to, just like I'm going to go back to the same limousine service because he's my buddy. I don't want to go to somebody else. I'd rather give him the business in a heartbeat than some stranger who's going to try and close me. Does that make sense to you? Now, some salespeople go, yeah, well, you make it sound so easy. I mean, come on. This is selling. There's a lot of rejection out there. People say no to you and stuff. It's tough business. Listen, I got to tell you something. If you think this job you have is tough, you better take another look. In fact, all of you right now, I want to tell you something. You don't work for a living. You don't. And neither do I. You go, oh, yeah, easy for you to say. I work for a living. No, you don't. I'll tell you what. I'll give you the test. Try it with me, won't you? Lift up your hands right now. Lift them up. turn them and face them towards you and look and see, do you work for a living? I doubt it. What do? You have anyone's dream as a life. You have the dream of you get paid to make friends. And if you don't make friends, if all you make are prospects or contacts or a few customers, then you'll do okay. But if you make deep friendships, I mean, that's what my life's about. I hope that through this experience, you and I have become friends, even though I may not have met you personally yet, and I hope someday I'll get to, and you'll say, hey, you know, you have that feeling with me. I want that with you. I hope, you know, sometimes when you say something like that, people go, oh, I don't know how real that is. It's real for me. I hope it's real for you. What are ways that I can get myself to care more about strangers? Because I know some people say, well, a lot of those strangers you meet, they're pretty mean out there. They're pretty rough. They're pretty outrageous. They can be totally harsh. I got to tell you something. It's just not true. There are maybe two, maybe three really harsh, mean, sinister people in this whole world. Maybe two or three. Now, it's true they move around a lot and you're liable to bump into them. But there's only two or three. Most people are basically good. And you need to find that good inside of them. Go for it.